A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. So today, I went about this case a little bit differently than I do, but at the same time, the same way I do. So what I mean by that when I say it's how I do it, but not, is after listening to Melissa's episode covering Disappeared, I was like, wow, it's been a long time since I've seen Disappeared or a show like that. So I literally went to Tyler Perry's show because I really enjoyed working on the case that I did based on Tyler Perry's show in the past. And I deliberately went looking for a case from that show that I hadn't heard of. However, I still did my same method of waiting until watching that last. And the reason that I do that is because I generally have an idea that these investigative shows, they have the capabilities of going to the farthest regions of the universe that they can to get the information that they need. So I know it's going to be a really well done broadcast, and I know that they're probably going to talk to family and friends and stuff. However, I just want to get the perspective that a lot of people do, which is they start reading about a case and then they find those types of broadcasts later. So
I also find that those shows typically have a narrative in mind.
That's another really great point. Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, that just adds to how it benefits me. So I started, of course, with the Charlie Project. We always direct you guys to the Charlie Project. And the general disappearance was there, but I still was surprised at how short that the little blurb is about the case with so much information out there. Not knocking the Charlie Project. You know I love them and I sing their praises all day long. And then, you know, I found a couple other things and then I read those and I settled on the episode, which brought it all together. And I'm frustrated and stunned and flabbergasted. I feel as flabbergasted as I did the last episode I did. I just don't know what to do with the information. I can't make it fit. So I will leave you with that to start with. So the case I'm going to tell you about today is the case of Matthew Jonathan Weaver Jr. Matthew Weaver Jr. was born on April 2nd of 1997. Matthew was primarily raised by his father and his stepmother in Simi Valley, California. His mother left his life very early on. I don't know the circumstances of it. It kind of doesn't matter because whether your mother or a parent or a caregiver dies, when you're young, they leave. There is something bigger going on. There's no doubt that to a degree, it's not even to a degree, excuse me, it is traumatic. So to me, those don't matter because I imagine they impact you in some way. But anyways, you know, Matthew's mother, you know, between Matthew's mother and father, they had another child. Matthew was the second. So he has an older sister. And then there's Matthew. He's left on his own with his two children, raising these two kids alone. And he meets someone and, you know, jump to the end, she becomes their stepmother. And she takes on the role of mom and raises these children. Matthew's father and stepmother went on to have two additional children of their own. And my understanding is very tight-knit family. Great sibling to his little siblings at that point. Matthew was described as a very good little boy. He was very easygoing. He didn't give anyone a hard time. It sounds like he's one of those kids that if his parents asked him to do something, he would. He could probably be trusted to take care of things on his own. You didn't have to twist his arm to do anything. He was loving. He was adventurous. And he was, you know, dreaming of just, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm taking some words that I saw about him, and it sounds like he was just kind of a dreamer, like thinking of what life could offer him, the adventures he could go on. And he also had a really soft spot for animals. Matthew didn't really seem to know what his passions were or what direction to go in. So I don't think, for me, this is too different from at least a handful, at least half the teenagers out there, right? I think a lot of teenagers still go to college, but they might not have any idea of what to do. They're just going because it's part of the process.
Right.
So just like many others around him, trying to figure out where you're going in life, what you want to do, and it's overwhelming because as a teenager, you're like, wow, I'm 18 years old. I feel like an adult, but I'm kind of a kid, and I'm kind of expected to figure out that one thing that I'm supposed to do with the whole rest of my life. Overwhelming, right? And probably makes you feel sometimes a little bit lost, or you lose your confidence because you don't appear to be one of those teenagers that know exactly what to do. You know, I think that it didn't mean Matthew was stagnant. Like, it didn't mean that he just was a deer in headlights and was like, I'm just going to stand in place and do nothing until the idea lands in my lap of what to do. And he made some solid effort. He traveled around, moved places. He tried to figure out where he fit. But inevitably, he settled back near his family in California. At this time, he was about 21, around the age of 21. A lot of changes, though, happened at this time. Matthew broke up with a girlfriend, which that in and of itself is, if it's one of your first relationships, and I'm not saying that it is, but, you know, he's had very few at this point, I'm sure, it could be devastating. And he got a new apartment about 20 to 25 minutes away from his family. So, you know, he had the support of his family. And I'm not saying that he didn't. That's not the point I'm making. But he, you know, was living under his family's roof. And then he's going and trying to do this thing again on his own. Yes, he's closer to home. Yes, he's done it before. But it's still a huge transition. I assume, just an assumption, he was a little bit defeated and lost, and he was searching for a connection, and, you know, he didn't know where to find it. And this led him to new friends who arguably weren't the best fit for him. And I get that. You know, I'm sure a lot of the peers that he, before he left California and moved around, I'm sure that these people that he was friends with growing up left for college or moved away or started their careers or whatever, and he came back and no one was there. So you tend to find new friends. It's a toss-up if they're going to be any good for you, I guess. Matthew's family noticed at this point a little bit more partying and some slight changes in his behavior. Now, there's nothing that outwardly stood out. Like, he didn't have, like, a complete behavioral shift. He's not treating people any differently. But I think he's, like, staying out a little bit longer. They're not really knowing who all of his new friends are, and I think he's missing a little bit of work at this point. So it hadn't progressed to this really problematic thing. It actually was just kind of beginning, and his family was like, I think he's just struggling right now. He's going to get back on track, which we've all been through some points in our life where maybe we're not as motivated or we're struggling. And, I mean, a lot of times we do bounce back.
And he was, what, 21?
Yeah, he's 21. He's just a baby.
He has his whole life ahead of him.
He sure does. This brings us to August 9th of 2018. It was a regular day. Matthew gets his check, and he then meets up with a friend, Melissa. He meets up with her, I guess, to kind of party, hang out, have a good time. This is around 9 p.m. So up until this point, nothing was really weird about the day. They allegedly drive around smoking marijuana and doing some cocaine. Matthew becomes kind of emotional at some point, and Melissa later reports that she felt bad leaving him like that. So she stays with him for a while, kind of easing, comforting him. And when he was okay enough, he eventually drops her off at her home at 5 a.m. So they're driving around from 9 to 5. That's like 8 hours of driving and partying. I don't know if they stopped. I don't know if it matters, but that would be a lot of driving. So I don't know. It should be noted that Melissa is a new friend. She's not known by family really at all. No, she's not known by family at all. I won't sugarcoat it whatsoever. Luckily, them hanging out and their whereabouts has been tracked by Snapchat. So we know that some of this information is true. So there's Snapchats of them videoing with each other. There's Snapchats of their locations at this point. So we're good on these details. So at this point, we would assume that Matthew is going to go home. It's 5 a.m. He's been up all night long. But Snapchat shows us that he immediately heads in a different direction. It appears he's dropping by several great onlooking scenic locations, popular to people. They're gorgeous. It's places that he's gone. He snaps some pictures there even. They're on Snapchat. And he does all this before he ends up at the start of a trailhead, which was actually gated off and normally locked. So the gate was either not locked or it was opened somehow by Matthew. And it's a gate, like I said, that's normally locked. Those are the only two options. Someone left it open or he knew how to open it. And he drove down this path. We know that this is what happened through his Snapchat locations, Matthew's Snapchat locations. But there are also towers and cameras on the trail, which capture his car on the trail. The road is difficult, but not impossible. This is probably like, I think someone had mentioned somewhere that it was like more like a utility road. So very small vehicles, one lane probably, kind of a road. So this is, like I said, impossible to drive on, but difficult. And remember that this isn't some after-hours rendezvous. By now, the sun is up, he's visible, and it's Friday morning. So this isn't some Sunday when no one's working, no one's around. Friday's a time when people are out and about still. So at 8 a.m., Matthew calls his dad, who misses the call. And I'm not sure if he called more than once, but either way, Dad misses these calls. At 11:58 a.m., he texts Melissa, and she texts him back that she's at work. His texts are, what they look like to me is someone who's either in a rush typing, is inebriated, or something like that, because they almost don't make sense, but they do. All right, I'm going to tell you what the texts say, and we don't normally swear on our podcast, as you know, but I'm going to use some language, some minor colorful language for you, and I just want to give you a heads up if anyone's around that you don't want to hear, etc. So what Matthew says in the text is, like some crazy is going on shit going on. So what I imagine that to be is him trying to say, like some crazy shit is going on. And then he types, I just want to talk when I have the chance. Unfortunately, Melissa's at work, so she doesn't respond immediately. But she responds about an hour later, and she texts him back asking if he's okay. And he doesn't respond. So the whole reason the investigation starts is because of a 911 call that came in reporting, and this is from hikers, that they heard yells for help. I don't know what time they said the yells for help took place, and I don't know what time the 911 call came in. But they sent emergency responders out there to check out what it was. And they didn't find anyone, and they didn't find Matthew. However, they did find his car. He drives a BMW, and this BMW was found at a point where this path probably turned into just maybe like a walking trail. So the car is way off path, and it is left in a place that's almost like on a side of a cliff. But the car would not have been able to, if possible, it would not have easily been able to be removed from that location. It's almost intentional that it was left there. They had to know, he had to know that his car was not going to make it out.
I feel like we're talking about Bryce Laspisa.
So this is why I mentioned that this case has so many pieces that don't fit together, because we were talking a bit about Bryce. We were talking a bit about Jenna last episode. And these have some of the same things going on. But anyway, I digress. And let me just also say that what the family said in Tyler Perry's episode was that, like, he was a car guy. Matthew was a car guy. He also had a BMW. He loved his car. He took great pride in his car. He knew what his car was capable of and what it wasn't. And this is not standard behavior for him. You know, they find the car in this impossible position. No Matthew, right? But they want to find out who the car belongs to. And, you know, they look, and very easy to find. It belongs to Matthew Weaver Sr. They contact Matthew Weaver Sr. And that's when the alarm bells go off, because it's like, that doesn't sound right. We got to figure out what's going on. They basically start investigating, start searching for him. So it sounds like there was a search, yes. I know there was a search, but it appears as though the family was not completely satisfied. Police easily kind of wrapped it up fast. They didn't continue searching a whole lot of time, a number of days or anything like that. The family reports, you know, the bulk of the investigation and the search has been completed by the family and strangers and friends and hikers they found randomly in the area that are willing to help. So they recruited extra help. And this extra help did searches, they retraced steps, they used drones of the area, which, interestingly enough, this drone footage was uploaded, and these pictures are available for public view, and the idea is the public could scan these pictures, I mean visually scan these pictures, zoom in and stuff, to look for Matthew or clues. And they did. The drone footage found a baseball cap that was rare enough that they concluded was not just most likely Matthew's. It sounds almost consistent with this is Matthew's, because it was a rare baseball cap. I believe it was Angels, and it was like a logo or something they didn't use that long. Also, Matthew's ex-girlfriend somehow, amazingly so, had the receipt to it. So they were able to conclude that it was the same hat, pretty much without a doubt. Family and searchers and hikers also found a ripped t-shirt that was white with what looked like could be blood on it, handed it over to authorities. I'll just skip to the end. It was tested. It took months and months, and it was inconclusive. And they found Matthew's BMW key. A hiker actually found that. These things are scattered all over the place. There's the last ping from the cell phone of Matthew's, which I'm not 100% sure that they have, only that they have the information from it. They have the clothing, the key, and the car, which are a great deal away from each other. So none of that makes sense. Okay, so let's look at a couple of other details. So there was a Snapchat uploaded by Matthew on the day, August 9th, of when he went missing, and it was a picture of a gun. Now, Matthew's not a gun user. He's not a violent person or anything, but it's a picture of a gun, and I believe it might be his dad's, but it's with the description, game over, on it, like when you put the text in your Snapchat, so game over. After the disappearance, they were able to put things together and find Melissa, who was this friend of Matthew's, and she was talked to. Police were like, she didn't have a lot of detail, but at the same time, she didn't seem like she wasn't being forthcoming. She just kind of said they didn't know each other well. They hung out. He was emotional when they left. It was what it was, and the texts were what they saw. She didn't have any more information about that. For the most part, they don't think that she's holding anything back. She did make some comments online about, I can't believe people, and I'm not quoting whatsoever, but I essentially can't believe people are suspecting me. Like, what would I do with a body, or how would I handle a body, or something like that? And people thought it was a little bit suspicious that she used that terminology to describe someone that she was friends with. yeah, this brings us to theories. Before I name a couple of them, do you have any thoughts, feelings, questions, theories of your own that just stand out?
Well, all I can do is really compare it to Bryce LaPisa. And there we think it's a mental break and he could be still alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Give me your theories.
Okay, so there is suicide. And that's what investigators initially thought. They were like, people do go out into the wilderness to end their life. And it's not like the family completely wrote that off, but it was like, you know, a lot about that doesn't make sense. And, you know, we've searched this area for months and months and just endlessly, and we haven't found his body. You know, that says, like, I don't know. Big I don't know on that. Doesn't really make sense, police officers. So there's that. There is drugs, which leads into some shady people, that kind of thing, which also can be linked to foul play, right? So there's foul play by shady people or whatever. Did he stumble across something that he shouldn't have seen by complete strangers and end up in a situation that was a foul play situation? Did he get lost? It was like 95 degrees that day or something like that. He could have been dehydrated, whatever. Another one is a serial killer, and I can get into more about that, but let me just first ask you where you want to start.
Tell me, I want to dismiss suicide almost immediately, and I want your thoughts.
Oh, okay. You want my thoughts right now. I got you. Okay, so the family does say that he did suffer from depression and that he was a sensitive guy and he kept a lot bottled up. And that's near quotes from the broadcast that I saw. However, you know, I think that they just have a hard time wrapping their head around that because of the searches that they've done in the area and because of the other pieces of this that don't quite fit. So there's the text messages to Melissa that don't make sense. There is the cries for help that the hikers heard that don't quite support suicide. Is it possible? Yes, but I think I'm inclined to kind of agree, and I'm impressed at the way that the family was able to kind of rationalize that. So, yeah, I think that there's a small window of possibility, sure, but that doesn't align with the other evidence that we have.
Okay. I don't understand what foul play would be like. It's not like there were other people around or involved.
So I've thought about this in so many ways. Now, let's look at this from drug dealers or gangs or that kind of standpoint, all right? And there's two ways that I look at this. And I'll just say one involves Melissa. And as you guys know, we would pull this episode down if this person wasn't involved or whatever. But people do wonder, okay? So the first scenario to me is that during the course of the night or through Melissa, Matthew was supposed to meet up with some drug dealers. And the reason I say that is because if he stopped after he dropped off Melissa, we would see it on his location. We would see if he spoke to anyone via text, Snapchat, or cell phone through cell phone records. So I don't think that he dropped Melissa off and made these last-minute plans to meet up with people. I think if plans were made to meet up with anybody, the plans were set in stone before that. So he drops her off. He goes and meets up with these people. It's already planned. He's killing time when he's supposed to meet up with them by taking pictures of scenic views and enjoying his morning, right? He either meets them before he reaches the gate, and something happens, and either whoever hurts him drives his car past the gate and parks it somewhere and scatters his things everywhere, which I think is the most plausible of these two scenarios that I'm giving you, or he drove with the person or persons in his car himself to that location where his car was, whether it be by force or not, and again, everything was scattered and he was disposed of. Now, the questions that I have about Melissa is if she was a link between him and some shady characters, or if he knew these people on his own. I mean, they've only talked to Melissa and had no need to go any further. So they haven't, to my knowledge, obtained or gotten to a point where they felt they needed to get cell phone records or anything like that. So that's kind of maybe the angle of drugs. And that matches potentially what's happening in Snapchat earlier that day with the picture of the gun that says game over. Perhaps he thought he was protecting himself. I don't know.
I could see that.
Okay. The other foul play scenario is I can't think of why he would drive with his nice car down that path, but let's just say for some reason he does and thinks it's a good idea. So he drives down this path, don't know why, and he parks his car and takes a walk and stumbles across an area because it's popular by hikers, workers, or whatever, and something happening. He's seen and he texts this message, something crazy is going on. I want to tell you while I have the chance. And then it doesn't look good for him. And they essentially do the same thing, dispose of his body, scatter his things everywhere.
So the only thing I want to say about that text message, there have been scenarios that I've been or seen where a situation got a little bit crazy. And, okay, I'm going to give you a semi-example.
Mm-hmm.
There's a situation that happens, right? And I think it's like drama-filled and fascinating, and I want to talk about it. My husband, once he's heard the story two or three times, me telling other people, is like, okay, I'm done with it. I don't want to hear about it anymore.
Yeah.
So I may text someone and say, hey, I want to tell you a story when I have the chance. Mm-hmm. Because my husband's not around and he doesn't want to hear it. So that may not be as cryptic as it sounds.
That's fair. That's fair. I think we have to accept that as a possibility as well.
Not that that made anything any more clear, but...
No. So, I mean, I can tell you about the two last theories that don't have a whole lot of extra information. He got lost. It was 95 degrees. He's dehydrated. He's used substances. He crashes and burns.
And then where is he?
Mentally. And that is the question, right? They have done extensive, extensive searches. The final theory we have is a serial killer. So we have Matrice Richardson, who went missing. Her body was recovered roughly 8 to 10 months later. We have Tristan Baudette, I believe is how you say his name, who was a dad who was camping, I believe, with his children, and he was killed at his campsite. And we have Elaine Park, who is still missing, who...
That's one of my to-do cases.
Well, I'm glad I didn't take that one from you because I was also thinking of covering that one.
Live and Die in L.A. did a whole season on her. So I need to listen to the entire season.
So these all happened within proximity of Matthew's disappearance. So they're wondering, is there some serial killer involved?
What does LAPD or the area police say about that?
I don't know if I have any responses, quotes by them or anything, only what the family generally feels about how the police have handled this. And it's...
Oh, I meant about the serial killer.
You know, I have to be honest with you. I don't know where one of these theories really generated from. I don't know. And I don't want to misspeak and say police believe or police have speculated because I'm not sure. So, yeah, I'm not sure what police think of that.
Because here's the thing. It is weird for a serial killer to change victimology.
I agree. I thought the same thing.
But I'm not an expert.
Do you have a particular theory that you think fits all this? Or are you ready to write any off? That would be really helpful.
I actually think that I'm going to say the same thing happened to him that happened to Bryce.
Stop it.
I actually do. Melissa. Because...
You're going to make up your own theory right now. Okay.
I am. I think that he had been partying or been whatever substances, was dealing with the effects of that, was inventing things in his head, which is why the things that were crazy were happening. I think he initially got lost, which is why he was screaming for help. But then I just think he just kept walking, and he's out there somewhere.
Well, that does pull together a lot of details, but I'm going to have to say I completely disagree with you.
Okay. I love it. What do you think? I mean, hold on. For all we know, the screams of help were he saw a mountain lion.
True. True. Where I get stuck is the purpose of driving down that utility road. With his
Why did Bryce drive up the canyon and then drive back down it and then drive up it again?
Well, we're doing a theory on top of a theory, right? So we still don't know what happened to Bryce today. So we can't say Bryce did this, so why can't Matthew? We're speculating on speculation.
Well, no, we know Bryce did it because it's on video.
I guess I'm referring to...
The why?
The why and the end result.
Okay, fine, fair. So go ahead, tell me what you think happened.
I think that it's very possible that he already had set plans to meet up with someone later in that morning. I think something happened to him before that utility road. I don't believe that he would bring his car down that road. I think he wouldn't have any business going there, especially if he didn't think he could get his car out. I think something then happened in terms of dispose. I don't know how they would have disposed of his body with the searches. They come up with nothing, but they definitely disposed of things. I think they walked away. They maybe even looked like hikers. I'm not sure. And I think that I don't have strong feelings about Melissa's perhaps involvement. Maybe it was just complete coincidence that they were hanging out or whatever, but I do think something happened, and that explains the gun, and that maybe explains the helps, right?
I mean, I disagree with you, but I understand your point.
Okay. Maybe he was... See, now I'm poking holes in my own theories.
But that's what we do.
He was able to text at 11:58, and he went down the utility road earlier.
You're assuming he sent the text from his phone, though.
I will. Yeah, I guess most people believe that to be true, that he texted those. Gosh. I don't know. I hate to say it like this, but I just have this horrible gut feeling. It's bad. It's foul play.
And I mean, it's totally possible that it is.
Do you like how I just threw my whole theory out and said, you know what? I'm just going to go with a gut feeling here.
No, I think cool. That makes sense, though.
Mm-hmm. He's driving around, waiting to meet up with someone, checking out the sites. He drives down the utility road. Maybe I quit. Gosh. I quit. I can't explain it. He wouldn't be forced to drive down a road in his own car and then have the freedom to text. So you can't have it both ways. Something had to happen before and he didn't make the text, or he was willingly going down the road and make the text. I don't know, but that doesn't align with what I hear about him. But then again, if he was under the influence of more drugs, would he have made a different choice? I don't know.
I've opened my mouth 4 times during Amy's last paragraph, and I just keep shutting it because Amy answers her own questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have a way to tie this all together unless I don't. I just don't. Not unless anything.
So do you want to open it up?
I thought I was mad when I wrote this up, but I'm actually a little bit more mad now. And usually I feel better when we talk some things through.
Well, I think the fact that we're on completely opposite sides doesn't help.
I don't think this is some mental break. I just don't.
Okay.
But I do think if he was the one texting, I don't even know that was drug related. I think he was in a rush.
Or driving.
True. I quit. Open it up, Melissa.
All right,
guys.
Tell us what you think. You've heard our thoughts. Tell us your thoughts, your theories. We love reading them on social media. And we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.